6 of us returned from the Dawn Patrol.
My word, only 6.
6 pilots and observers, that's all, sat down to breakfast in the mess.
Here comes the tea.
In a French chateau at a long table.
And the same in this country, in the Squire's Hall, an exceptionally long table.
With candelabra.
Indeed. I sometimes waited upon table when they had guests at the house for comings of age and shooting parties.
Shooting parties, too?
You're familiar with shooting parties?
Oh, indeed, indeed. I've often met my end at the hand of shooting parties of one sort and another.
Well, now, it is a small world. Matron, Mr. Frewen and I find we have a great deal in common. Then you must have your tea with Mrs. Thatcher, Mr. Frewen.
Oh, thank you.
Unless he wishes to join the other old gentleman.
Oh, I much prefer your company, Mrs. Thatcher. Thank you, matron.
Would you come to my office at 10:30 in the morning, Mr. Frewen, to complete the admission formalities?
Happily, matron.
Thank you, matron. Milk?
Please.
I do hope matron didn't press you to remain against your wishes.
Oh, by no means, Mrs. Thatcher.
Old gentlemen prefer the company of other old gentlemen.
Ah, but not of old fogies, Mrs. Thatcher. And they are old fogies. To be thrust among them gives one the sinking feeling of having reached the knacker's yard.
Oh, God forbid, Mr. Frewen. You're sprightly in body and mind, and this is a nice old people's home. One can sit here overlooking the garden. We may be spared to see a few more seasons come and go. Country people like me, the autumn is the sweetest season rather than the spring. The apples are picked and the harvest has been gathered in.
And the squirrel has stored his nuts for the winter?
Yes. You're not a countryman yourself, Mr. Frewen.
Oh, everybody knows about squirrels.
And what, may I ask, has been your line or profession?
Active.
Yes.
Adventurous.
Oh, well now.
Which is why, as I said the other day, I don't care for the company of the old fogies here, Mrs. Thatcher. If they manage to get to the summer house without assistance, they think they've been to the North Pole.
In winter, we'd close the shutters and listen to the clock. My father would read to us children from the good book. The days of man are but as grass, for he flourisheth as a flower in the field.
You can't beat it. It's a rattling good read.
I had 6 children of my own, and on winter nights when they were little, we'd listen for the ring of Thatcher's boots on the frosty road as he came home from his toil.
A farm worker.
We were often mistaken about hearing the sound of his boots, but the dog, Cap, she never made a mistake. When she raised her ears, you could be sure he was coming.
Well, there'd be some excitement then.
Oh, I should say. And in summer, too, in the hayfield, that was an exciting time. Oh. Before all the machines, everybody worked at the haymaking, even the very old. And the very young. As little girls, tots, we weren't too small to rake up the tails.
Oh,
but
you.
How our arms burnt with the sun. We couldn't sleep, it hurt so at night.
And at Easter, the people used to say, Christ is risen, by way of greeting.
Somewhere on your travels, Mr. Frewen.
A distant country.
But it was on Easter Day that Thatcher waited for me at the church gate.
Indeed, Easter.
Yes, Easter Sunday. Oh, he was little more than a boy then. He blushed like a beetroot in his bowler hat, and he asked my permission to accompany me home.
A treasured memory.
It was an autumn when he died. God gleaned Thatcher for his harvest.
A melancholy season.
But not for us country folk, as I explained, Mr. Frewen.
I met my end, too, in an autumn.
Like Thatcher.
But far away, not surrounded by kindred.
Oh, dear.
The river is so wide at the sawmills, you'd take it for a lake. And up in the forest, the comrades were felling day and night to over-fulfill the plan before the ice came and stopped the floating of logs down the river.
You were a lumberjack, Mr. Frewen.
I was the sawman's assistant at the Red October Mill. There was no reason for us to keep pace with the arrival of the logs. Machinery doesn't freeze up. We could have caught up through the winter. But there was a rule that logs should be sawn as they arrived, and in those countries, Mrs. Thatcher, it doesn't pay to argue with the rules.
So I'm told, Mr. Frewen.
We worked night and day. Now, then Ostapenko set an example to us all, lifting logs, putting them to the saw, all his muscles rippling. Mrs. Thatcher, our eyes were swollen through lack of sleep. All of us dazed with weariness, so wooden ourselves that in the low, small hours, Pavel Ustinovich seized me in mistake for a log and put me to the saw.
Good morning.
Ah, good morning, Mrs. Thatcher.
Please don't interrupt your newspaper reading, Mr. Frewin.
Oh, there's no pleasure. I wouldn't gladly interrupt for your company, Mrs. Thatcher. Please stay. I see another of the old fogies here slipped away last night.
Slipped away?
Kicked the bucket, snuffed it, expired, shuffled off the mortal coil.
Oh.
I never thought I'd end in an institution where they all end in bed.
Thatcher dropped in the shafts.
All honour to him. And I, Mrs. Thatcher, have always died with my boots on.
Yes.
Always. Except once.
Exceptions to every rule.
When the cardinal caught me in bed with his mistress. He had me boiled in oil.
Gracious me.
So it goes against the grain to be just a number among the old fogies in this institution, waiting to fizzle out quietly in the night.
We mustn't think like that, Mr. Frewin. We've everything to live for. Look, the rain has stopped and the birds are returning, and all our past lies before us. I said, Miss Christine, you'll eat your cheese.
And I said, Mr. Christian, you'll eat your cheese.
Or there'll be no ribbon for your curls.
Or, by God, you'll walk the plank.
It's my duty, I said, to inform you.
With the utmost seriousness and the greatest regret.
That unless the thatch is repaired immediately.
A state of war will exist between our two nations.
And we can all expect a wetting.
As from 0800 hours tomorrow morning.
I do enjoy our conversations.
Tête-à-tête, as we would say at the Quai d'Orsay.
Would you?
French, diplomatic.
Would there be grand ladies there?
Oh, yes.
Chandeliers, champagne.
Indeed.
Ladies of refinement and distinction.
Yes, great beauties.
Oh.
Ah, but none to hold a candle to you, Mrs. Thatcher.
Oh.
No, indeed, none to hold a candle.
I missed my father at the Goose Fair.
I missed a penalty at Wembley.
I lost my innocence in a cornfield.
I lost my fortune at Las Vegas.
I charged the guests too little.
I charged the enemy too often.
I caught a cold at the threshing.
I caught Bradman at the Oval.
I burned the scones.
I burned my boats.
I baked a cake for his birthday.
I baked to death in the Sahara.
I sold vegetables round the market.
I sailed single-handed round the world.
At the end of the war, they all came back, except Jack and Tom.
And me?
We do have some good talks.
We do. Another of the old codgers gasped his last during the night.
Indeed.
Slid off quietly.
Poor old gentleman. Gracious me.
Thatcher. Mr. Frewin is hovering impatiently. He's shy of me.
Strange that he should be bashful, a man of so many adventures.
Mr. Frewin, do come over. I'm leaving some tea for you with Mrs. Thatcher.
Thank you.
By the way, your books have arrived, so it'll be a little more like home for you. I'll send them to your room.
Thank you, matron.
Won't you sit down, Mr. Frewin?
Yes. Yes, I have something...
Well, do sit, then. Shall I pour?
Mrs. Thatcher...
Mr. Frewin?
I have something of which I want to make you a presentation of. It's this.
Oh, a rose. A beautiful rose.
I culled it personally.
I receive it gladly. Do sit down.
I'm not very practiced, Mrs. Thatcher. Inept. Mr. Thatcher, no doubt.
Mr. Thatcher had the advantage of a team of horses, Mr. Frewin. When I passed as a girl, he'd drive his Clydesdale so hard that the flights of seagulls could scarcely keep pace with the plough. Of course, I pretended not to notice.
I have been a stranger to such decorum.
But not to ladies, Mr. Frewin.
Oh, well,
you've never been without...
Oh, by no means. Too much, if anything, Mrs. Thatcher. It led to my death.
When you were boiled in oil?
That time, yes. And when I was chased off the pier...
My soul.
My third summer season at the Hippodrome. A comedian, an artiste, is besieged by women, Mrs. Thatcher.
Yes.
There's so much of the day with nothing else to do.
No.
There were more than 20 ladies. I felt, oh...
I know.
Do you?
Yes, as though you'd been put out to stud.
Exactly. That's it, exactly. You do understand. And I wasn't adequate, Mrs. Thatcher. The Spanish knife thrower took my refusal as an insult to his wife. There was my landlady and her daughter, the deck chair attendant, the mayor's chauffeur's wife. There were the singing quads, the lady lifeguard. Oh, there is a time, Mrs. Thatcher, when one would simply prefer the newspaper.
And they wouldn't let you read.
Besieged me in my dressing room. Deprived ladies in alarming numbers. They chased me out of the theatre, across the promenade and along the pier. There was nothing for it but to jump. I was instantly devoured by sharks. The incident was observed by holiday crowds. There was something about it in the papers.
Papers, papers, read all about it. Late extra, papers, papers.
My father's papers, when he died, directed that his estate should be equally divided between the eight of us. It worked out at 3 and 4 pence each and an eighth share of a vegetable patch.
After the toil of a lifetime.
He was a good man. When he returned from a journey, he used to tease us children to dole for little presents in the pockets of his greatcoat. But we feared him.
Loved and feared.
Our own children never feared Thatcher. He was the gentlest of men. One Christmas day, 14 of us sat down to dinner, and he had to leave when the fun and the shouting was at its peak. He made a joke I still laugh about.
Oh.
I'm sorry. I do beg your pardon.
Oh, dear Mrs. Thatcher.
Oh, it was such a little joke.
I am impatient to hear it.
Little John said, "Why do you have to go, Father? It's Christmas Day." And Thatcher said, "You know, John and I know, but the cows, they're ignorant beasts. They don't know it's Christmas Day."
Oh, dear. A good riposte.
It answered him.
An excellent riposte, dear me. I shall, with your permission, put that bon mot in a little notebook. Pensées I keep.
By all means. He was so good-natured. In the shooting season, there are many among the quality who delight in potting the beaters. A professor from Oxford never hit a bird, but year by year took aim at Thatcher, confident that he'd accept it in good part.
It may have been the briefest moment after the squad fired Mrs. Thatcher, or it may have been an hour, but I had only one thought, amazement that they had killed me.
Executed you, Mr. Frewitt?
My own comrades.
Rough justice.
Revolutionary justice.
Oh, I see.
The villages of the plains and the Sierra were to rise at a signal.
Ah.
And as the trucks of soldiers with their Yankee arms sped out of the city to aid the provincial garrisons, the electricity workers would throw the switches and paralyze the capital.
Ah.
I commanded a village high in the Sierra. I suspected the priest of being a double agent.
And him a clergyman, a gentleman of the cloth.
We rose. We shot the landlords and stormed the police
posts.
Oh,
bravo.
But unknown to me, through a blunder, the uprising had been put off. The city comrades were unready to throw the switches.
Dear, dear.
I was ordered to stop the uprising and conceal the arms. It may have been dialectically the correct line.
Quite.
But the people were roused. Their choice was to fight. The army brought tanks and artillery and helicopters. Oh, I was wrong about the priest. He died with his flock, firing from the rubble of his bombed church.
A Christian, thank God.
I hid up for a week among the sugar cane, and when the comrades found me, the tongue was black in my head.
Oh,
I was accused of treacherous indiscipline. My criminal act in continuing the fight was shown to be objectively reactionary.
Oh.
There was nothing to argue about. The trial was swift. I faced the squad.
I used to go up the ladder for apples.
I used to go down with my ship.
Wearing my long skirt.
My captain's cap.
In the days when ladies were modest.
Officers were gentlemen.
As a young woman, I was defenseless in the cornfield.
And I, as a young man.
Surprised by the importunity of the squire's son.
Machine gun fire from the wood.
He rolled over, flattening the corn, his passion spent.
My body riddled with bullets.
At 17, you don't know what to expect.
I should have liked to have lived to my 21st birthday.
His father, when he came to here, gave him a horse whipping.
Ah, yes, the squirearchy.
And sent him for a naval officer. But when he came on leave in uniform, he held me by both hands and thanked me with tears in his eyes.
Mrs. Thatcher, I hope I too may have cause to thank you from an overflowing heart before a final death puts paid to it all.
Mr. Frewin, don't run away. So shy for so bold a man.
Too bold. Mr. Frewin, you're too bold.
I only proposed a toast, matron.
A toast, did you say?
To the next man to die.
Boldly proposed at the breakfast table, Mrs. Thatcher, orange juice upraised. The old gentlemen were badly upset.
They eye each other for shrouds.
Not everyone accepts the ultimate as easily as yourself, Mr. Frewin. The joke was not well received.
The old fogies, they shrink from death.
Thatcher had a pullover that shrank.
Shrank?
Shrank so small it made a dress for Betty.
Shrinking, you can shrink to a pinhead of dead matter, a collapsar.
Collapsar?
Collapsed star, Mrs. Thatcher. A planet shrunk to nothing.
Goodness.
Yes. I was speaking to Bert Carpenter at the time. Our boot toes met, then our hat brims, then our chins. Bert, I said, this planet is a collapsar.
What a shock.
A policeman, noting our proximity, suspected impropriety in a public place.
Not you, Mr. Frewin.
He was about to blow his whistle, but it whistled down his throat.
No.
His helmet shrank through his belt to his boots. I shrank into Bert Carpenter. Buildings shrank. Trees shrank, and before you could say Bob's your uncle, the whole bag of tricks of us had shrunk into an infinitely dense pinhead of matter. A black star lost in the universe.
Did you know a gentleman, a Mr. Smithson?
The one who refused to have new batteries in his hearing aid?
He died during the night.
Slipped away?
Quietly.
Well, 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 well.
I thought you'd like to know.
Bless you, Mrs. Thatcher. This book, I thought it might interest you.
Wallpaper patterns.
I put in papers to mark the ones that took my fancy. There. Pink is a nice colour.
Yes, but a rather busy pattern, perhaps.
Perhaps on a big wall. Possibly more for an alcove.
They're good quality wallpapers. Who makes them?
It's the council book for council houses. For old people, among others.
I see.
Ah, here's matron. Perhaps you'd find it interesting to look through after your siesta.
Yes, sir.
Good morning, matron.
Mr. Frewin? Mrs. Thatcher, I have something for you.
The tea.
Besides the tea, there.
What is it?
A clock. It was given by the council to the residents of Cliviger Street, the second prize for the best-kept street in the town.
What has it to do with me?
And they can't divide it between them. And they felt it would mean most to you because you lived there so long.
Oh, but no.
Congratulations.
And my congratulations, Mrs. Thatcher.
But no.
You're going to have to look to your laurels, Mr. Frewin.
Hmm?
You're among prize winners here. I've heard all about your DSO.
Ah.
But you're going to have to look to your laurels.
Of course, there's been a mistake.
Of course.
Cliviger Street. I lived all my life in the country.
Of course.
Thatcher would not have heard tell of living in Cliviger Street.
No, of course he wouldn't.
I'm sure matron is efficient.
But the best of them bungle in these big bureaucratic institutions.
Do they?
Oh, yes. The Air Force. Oh,
please tell me.
Well, that's a big bureaucratic institution.
Yes.
Well, then. Well, for instance, they were sending me mess bills for years after I'd been blown to smithereens.
Doesn't that go to show?
Yes. We were bombing the ball-bearing plants at the time with the aim of scattering those millions of ball-bearings.
I see.
So, Mrs. Thatcher, they'd all be on their hands and knees looking for their ball-bearings while our army triumphed unopposed in the field.
They were shrewd, our leaders. Shrewdness is a quality of the quality.
As you would notice among the aristocrats that passed on horseback as you worked on the land.
Exactly. That's it to a T. Now, do tell me about your nice death.
Oh, there's nothing much to say, really. It was, as matron mentioned, the third part of my DSO.
The most remarkable.
Came up with the rations. The earth and the sky at night had all the colours of that wallpaper book.
Mm.
Fires, yellow route markers, red target indicators, searchlights, shells. And then, quite vividly, Mrs. Thatcher, green sky markers as 1010th stratocumulus spread across the target at 0113.
Imagine.
Then I saw smoke pouring from the starboard outer engine, a dense white billow against the stars. I was losing my glycol.
Nasty to lose your glycol, Mr. Frewin.
And worse was to come. Rear gunner. Fighter, 8 o'clock high.
Fancy.
They were his last words, Mrs. Thatcher. He went in a burst of cannon fire, and the whole tail unit went with him.
Now that properly set the cat among the pigeons.
Oh, precisely. Stick loose in my hands, rudder bar flopping like a spar on a broken gate, spinning down through the cloud layer straight towards the blazing factories. I kept my head.
As you always did, Mr. Frewin.
Compass course to steer, please, navigator, I said. And he was a gentleman, Mrs. Thatcher. He was a brick, a Canadian. Relax, skipper, he said. We're bang on course for target. Anyway, if you would look through the patterns in this wallpaper book, Mrs. Thatcher.
I will.
And if it should be that you find one that meets with your approval, then before I could take the next step, that is the step of applying for a council house, that is, a tenancy thereof, I should have to... I wonder if you follow my drift, Mrs. Thatcher.
I'm so bold as to believe that I do, Mr. Frewin.
I should be honoured if you would consent to share an application with me.
I am honoured that you ask. I will look at the wallpapers. Please don't rush off. I'm most deeply moved, Mr. Frewin. I so look forward to our talks. But...
A relief in a place like this, where some old fogey sidles off quietly every night, and the matron can't even keep proper records of where the female inmates lived all their lives.
An inexplicable error. Mr. Frewin, what I was going to say, our talks are so agreeable.
We hit it off.
Yes, but to spend the whole of life together, even such time as may be left to us...
Oh, I wouldn't wish to take Thatcher's place, or to efface from your memory the ring of his boots on the frosty road, or the swoop of the seagulls following his plough.
I'm sure. I must have time to think.
Of course.
You see, there are obstacles.
Obstacles?
Differences.
Differences?
Yes, differences. You see, I've had such a simple life, and you have such eventful deaths.
I should start your tea alone, Mrs. Thatcher.
I'll wait for
it. I'm afraid he won't be coming, Mrs. Thatcher.
He's not?
Yes. He died in the night.
But that's impossible. I've thought things over. I've come prepared to make an answer to a proposal he put.
He was very well thought of by his employers.
His employers?
He worked at Bowden's, much of the time in the book department.
Book department?
The parcels of books that came here for him, they were sent by his old employers. I thought you'd like to know how well they thought of him. He was a great reader.
But... whom are we speaking?
Mr. Frewin.
But not our Mr. Frewin. He's the least bookish of men.
He spent a great deal of his time reading when he wasn't with you.
But that can't have been our Mr. Frewin. You see, I've made a choice of wallpapers.
I'm sorry. Perhaps it would be a comfort to know that he died peacefully in his sleep.
Oh, well, then.
I thought you'd like to know.
Yes. Peacefully in his sleep.
Yes.
Well, then that can't possibly have been my Mr. Frewin. Leave the tea, please, matron. I'll pour when he comes.